fans, we're taking a brief moment to recognize and show our appreciation for the incredible support of our sponsors. Their commitment not only fuels our content, but also ensures we can bring you the very best of the airgun world. Firstly, a huge shout out to Southern Precision Air Weapons. Ken is a master of hard-hitting airgun tunes that deliver unrivaled accuracy. Moving on, we extend our gratitude to High Pressure Pneumatics. Be sure to check out what Tom has going on at his store in Michigan and online as well. Let's not forget the remarkable contribution of Donnie FL. Their innovations in suppressors have revolutionized the experience in the field, combining stealth with performance. A special thanks to GX Compressors as well for their robust and efficient compressors that are an absolute game changer in the pneumatic technology and convenience. Be sure to check out Scout Air Guns for the Epic and the all-new Evo. JSB and Predator International for the finest in airgun projectiles. Affordable, well-made, and fun airgun products from Umarex Airguns. And lastly, we express our sincere appreciation for Saber Tactical. Their tactical gear is not only about strength and durability, it's about taking your airgun experience to the next level. We proudly stand alongside these titans of the airgun industry and invite you, our valued listeners, to explore their outstanding offerings. Supporting our sponsors is directly supporting the airgun geeks, enabling us to continue delivering you the content you love and trust. Thank you for being the most essential part of our journey. Your engagement and support make all of this possible. Until next time, stay tuned and keep supporting those who make the airgun geeks a reality.
Hey, Bill, how are you?
I'm pretty good, Pat. I'm going to have to cut that out in the edit. That'll be okay. It'll be better left on the editing room floor. But I'm doing very well. I've had a very, very busy week working on video content for the new channel so that I can get it kind of queued up and then get back to focusing on what's important, which is our continuing airgun coverage. And, you know, on that topic, Pat, we have a very unique guest this week, and I am so delighted that he was able to join us. I ran into him at SHOT Show this year while I was running around getting the stories that mattered to the air gunner, and it was so delightful to meet him again. He and I actually met at SHOT Show the last time I was there at 2017. Mm-hmm. It turns out that was there was a pause there that he wasn't really in the air gun scene for a while. And I got to talk about his reentry into that. And then I said, hey, what would you think about coming on the podcast? But before we get to our guest, Pat, what kind of air gun shenanigans have you been up to this week?
Well, a lot of our listeners and viewers are going to be shocked when I say that I got a hold of a Daystate Red Wolf and a programmer, nonetheless, thanks to Ken. So I've been fiddling with that, getting ready for RMAX. So I'll be playing with that. And I think I'm going to bring my infamous Black Beauty out there, which is my Edgun Leshy 2 and 30 cal. And, hopefully take the finals for speed shooting this year. That's my goal. Other than that, just out hunting with Bob and Helen, shooting iguanas, playing with the boat, enjoying the weather. It's been gorgeous.
Not hunting with them. You're hunting for them.
Well, they secretly sit on the front of the boat and they point and they're like, there's one. So I don't know. You know, they're very competitive lizards. So,
yeah,
you know. I get it. Other than that, everything's been doing well. Bonnie's been healing up well. Had a doctor's appointment with her, and everything's doing well. Just enjoying the weather. Parents finally went back north, so the snowbirds have migrated north. So we went from a very full house to the normal family. So things are good. Things are doing well. I can't complain.
Very good. Very good. I have been lackadaisical in my air gun activities these last couple of weeks, but I got to get back into it because I'm actually considering going to there's a Sacramento Valley field target shoot. Oh. And it's actually kind of a special shoot for me, because the guy who was instrumental in me first getting involved in field target, which I don't compete nearly the way I should. In order for me to keep my skills sharp, I should be kind of in the drill of getting to as many matches as I can. But Jim was the guy that I met at a air gun show here in California mm-hmm. many years ago. And he was the guy that kind of got me really involved and interested. And he was, you know, very warmly invited me to a match. He's like, look, just come. Don't worry about what gun you bring. Just come to a field target event and we'll get you a gun. We'll set you up. You won't have to worry about a thing. We'll guide you through this. It's very informal at the club level. And Jim was the reason that I got involved in field target. And he passed away rather suddenly a couple of years ago. And we started having this memorial event. Usually the first event at Sac Valley Field Target is dedicated to the memory of Jim. And, you know, I really want to try and make that. But, you know, I never like to do things the easy way, Pat. You know me. You know how I roll.
You don't.
No. I've got that very interesting custom stock from Craftsman Vit over in Europe that is made for my vintage RWS Model 52 with the T01 trigger, which has actually always shot better than my HW97. We're not talking about huge numbers here. It may shoot 15% better, which, you know, I think the HW97 can, in an indoor range with no wind, it can do a 0.3 inch diameter group at 35 yards. I did that at Utah Air Guns at their indoor range.
Oh, wow.
It's capable of, you know, really good accuracy, enough to shoot field target. But you know, the way my brain is, it gnaws at me that I'm not using the most accurate Springer I have. So I'm thinking about chucking that stock on the RWS, trying to get a scope dialed in before Sunday, and then just go up there and have fun. You know, I mean, you know our two rules for competition, right?
Oh, yeah.
What are they?
Have fun and don't be last.
Right. So I'm hopeful that honestly, there aren't that many. When I go to events like this, there aren't that many people who compete in the Springer class. So mm-hmm. it's usually a pretty small pool. So it's going to be hard for me to not come in last, but I'm going to do my best. I'm going to try and not let the podcast down and let our viewers and listeners down. But yeah, I get a hoot out of that. It is kind of a long drive. And I actually drove into the side of my truck with the tractor this week, which really was not a good way to start the week. But yeah.
It's a Toyota. It'll be all right.
Yeah. I mean, the truck, the truck works fine, but it broke my heart because, you know, for a 2001, it's actually a pretty clean truck body wise, but this is the first dent that I've added on it. So that hurt a little bit, but anyway, that's my air gun escapades. And I'm excited to get that gun back out and get back in the groove again after a long winter. Yeah, we do have those in California where it just basically rains all the time. So, you know, here we go. You have any business that we need to cover before we introduce our guest this week?
Nope. Well, just short of Ballistol, for those that are listening, Ballistol sending out everyone who won. So Woo-hoo! Pay attention to that. They'll be going out the week this is launched. So that would be the 27th, I think, is Monday. So just watch for that. I had a couple people email that were like, thank you and really appreciative. And thank you, Ballistol, for that. That was a big thing for us too. We really enjoyed that because I love Ballistol. You know, my saying, Bill, it's like Frank's Red Hot. I put that on everything, you know.
You know, so, it's funny cologne. That you say that because There's a really, really, really big YouTuber who goes by the YouTube name Wrangler Star, who picks on guys from the East Coast all the time. But anyway, he is a West Coast homesteader slash YouTube icon, and he does cover a lot of really good stuff on proper tool usage and sharpening really good quality cutting tools. And he actually has a little tin in his sharpening cabinet with Ballistol rag in it that he uses to wipe down his gouges and chisels before he puts them away to keep the fingerprints off of them. And I was like, you know, that is actually a really good use for Ballistol that is actually not directly firearm related, but yeah, handy stuff. So big thank you to our friends at Ballistol for laying that stuff on us. Let's throw their name up here just so we don't forget them.
Correct. Other than that, that's it right now.
All right. Well, Pat, our guest today is a veteran of the air gun YouTube world. He is the reason many of us are involved at the level we are in the air gun ethos. And I've got to say, Rick is just a genuine, sweet guy. His YouTube handle is the Urban Air Gunner. But as soon as you hear Rick speak, you're like, Urban? What? that does not sound urban to me. So
no.
Rick has transitioned. He became the suburban air gunner, and now he is the flat out rural air gunner and lives out in the middle of nowhere. So he has transitioned and grown, and we are so happy to have him. So let's bring him in, Pat.
Bring him on in.
Man,
there he is. Oh, he's looking at. He's looking at.
I'm sorry.
Looking at air gun porn.
He's got his breath freshener.
All right. Excellent.
Getting ready for all the BS that's going to go down in here.
Oh, there's sure to be mountain for that.
Y'all were talking about Ballistol, man. I use that stuff religiously. You know, it's a great product. It's funny that y'all were talking about that. How's everybody?
Pretty good, Rick. Were you able to hear us while you were in the back room there?
I was.
That's awesome. That's
yeah.
So cool.
I was in the green room, hanging out.
Very good. I'm glad you had audio there. I've never been in the naughty box, so yeah. I didn't know
the naughty box. Yeah. I should have had the one. My buddy Keith Warren was on this one. And I should have got the one that I was on like many years ago. I don't even have a copy of it. Sad.
I used a copy of the Airgun Hobbyist magazine for a joke that we did with Lee Perryman at the at Iowa this year, yeah. Iowa 2024. And I'm sitting there reading the magazine, and Lee was on the cover that month.
Yeah.
And he walks by and he says, hey, do you know where the Airgun Geeks are? And I said, no, Lee, trust me, man. You don't want to get on that show. Those guys suck your ear off. And he goes, oh, okay, thanks. And he kept walking. But I act all shocked because he was the guy on the cover. But, yeah, it was fun. It was fun. You know, I love that.
Magazine. Something like that to me one time. I was working with Air Gun Depot on something, and they did a video. It's pretty funny, you know, where they were sitting on the guy sitting on the toilet, and he's reading, and I'm on the cover, and he goes, Rick Ward, who the hell is Rick Ward? What's a tech, you know, technician? It shows it, and he's sitting on the toilet. You know, it was a funny intro, probably one of the funniest videos I've ever been on.
I remember you that know? One.
You remember that?
I'll tell you what, the air gun world is remiss without the Air Gun Depot content, because they used to put out some genuinely funny, good content.
Mm-hmm.
There were some controversial people involved during their various periods of their existence. We won't get into that any more than we need to, but
that's right.
I did enjoy a lot of the stuff that came out of that channel, And, you know, Rick, it is so cool to have a veteran air gun YouTuber with us.
And
it's so, I am so delighted that you are back in the fold and back here helping carry the torch, because honestly, this torch arm was getting kind of tired, and it's good to have you come along and say, hey, let me carry that again for you.
Well, it's good to be back, you know, and it's like you and I talked about at SHOT Show, and you know, just a lot of obstacles were in the way, and life happens, you know, to everybody. Mm-hmm. And I had to try to jump over those hurdles, you know, but it's good to be back, you know, just getting life back together and kind of starting over. It's good.
Excellent. Now, I know you were telling me a story the other day about you. You were riding on your lawnmower, listening to the Air Gun Geeks podcast. After you had already viewed it, viewed it on YouTube, and then you were listening to it on your lawnmower. And I'm going to let you take the story over from there, because I think it's freaking priceless what the connection was between a previous guest, you, the podcast. Go.
Well, you know, it's funny because when I work a full-time job, I'm sorry about that, YouTube, but you guys, I just, you know, blew everybody's mind here. I do have a full-time job. So when I get off of work in the afternoons, I live on this big farm and I have a lot to do, and mowing grass is part of it. And so I was watching, I got caught up watching, you know, the Air Gun Geeks video and with Rick Ream and Chris Turk. Mm-hmm. And I'm watching it, and I'm like, oh God, I want to comment so bad, you know, and I'm watching it. Well, then it's starting to get dark. So I jumped on the lawnmower, I put my earbuds on, and I just put it in the cup holder, and man, I took off mowing and I'm listening. And every now and then I'd stop and I'd back it up. I go, what did he just say? And I'd listen to it again. And like, well, yeah, okay. I wish I could comment on that. I just went on back to mowing. But for the whole podcast, I kept finding grass to mow, and then finally I'd turn the lights on because I was still mowing grass, you know. But it was, that's the beauty about the internet and YouTube and podcasts. I mean, you can listen to them anywhere. But because Rick Rain and Chris Turk are two good friends. I mean, I don't get to talk to them and see them as much as I used to, but I've worked with them quite a bit over the years, so.
You were telling a story about an event that he was a part of last year, I guess it was.
Oh yeah, Iraq Veteran 8888, who's a big YouTuber in the gun world, mm-hmm. I introduced him into the world of air rifles, and so he really just kind of took hold of it, started shooting air rifles a bunch. Well, he was shooting for FX at the time. And they were going to do some video work, and 68 Whiskey and all those guys came down, and Chris came down with them. Well, I can't remember if I reached out to Chris or maybe he reached out to me and said he was going to be in Georgia and wanted to know where I lived. I think, if I recollect it right, but anyways, and I said, oh yeah, I said, you're going to be down there on my farm shooting. And it was like, wait a minute, what? I said, you're going to be at my farm doing the video with Eric. And he starts freaking out. He's like, holy cow, are you kidding me? And he goes, man, I'm going to be at the Urban Air Gunners place, you know? And he was like, you're the reason why I got into air gunning and just all this stuff. And he goes, yeah, I mean, it just out of the blue, do you drink bourbon? And I said, dude, I'm a bourbon snob. I love bourbon. And he brought me some Iron Fish Distiller bourbon that was finished in the maple syrup barrel. And it is the best bourbon that, you know, I mean, it is good stuff. It has a really sweet finish to it. And, but anyways, he kind of geeked out a little bit, and, you know, it just, he's a great guy. And I've worked with him, with the ASA over the years, and Rick Ream, we've just been friends since, you know, he started, you know, getting into air guns. I made a few phone calls and kind of helped him, you know, not taking credit for anything he's done, but, you know, kind of got him in front of some people, you know, with the air gun world. So it's just weird. And I didn't, again, it's not like I set out to be anybody or do anything. I'm that guy. You know, if you have a flat tire, I'm going to pull over and help you change the tire. You know, I just, that's me. That's what I do. So yeah, Chris is a good guy, man. He had a great time down here on the farm hunting. He killed some deer and I can't remember what else he killed. I was working. Again, I have a full-time job, so I couldn't stay back there. Our deer camp is a mile from my house. Mm-hmm. And then we have a 1,000-yard shooting range. So they were actually in my front yard shooting 1,000 yards across the cotton field and shooting a big gong out there out of my front yard. I come home from work, there's 20 people out there with cameras everywhere. And I'm like, what are y'all doing?
You know? So, jeez. Anyway,
yeah. It's neat. It's you know, I cannot describe how cool it is to just know all these different people in this gun world. I mean, it's so much fun to the camaraderie is what is best about it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not killing animals. It's not, you know, one brand of gun or another. It's the camaraderie you have when you sit down at the campfire and have a glass of bourbon and a cigar and just shoot the bull and share stories, you know. That's just good stuff.
That's so cool.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It is, it's the culture and the camaraderie. Yeah. And it's like you've, like when Bill and I go to an event like RMAC or something, it's like we've known each other for years. And you know, we've talked a little throughout the year, but it's just like, hey, how are you? Hugging and stuff, and how's the family? It's just amazing.
Yeah, well, it's funny because
we have known each other for years.
Yeah, we have, yes.
You know, Yvette over there at Air Force Air Guns, you know, she has introduced me to people before, and it's like she would go, so-and-so, this is Rick Ward, or Rick Ward, this is so-and-so. And I'd, hey, man, long time no see. I haven't seen you in a while. And she's like, what, y'all know each other? And she says, you know, everybody in the world has a 6 degrees of separation, but I have one. She goes, you can't, I can't take you anywhere that you haven't met somebody or you know somebody, you know? And it's funny because I did a rodeo in her hometown up in Kentucky many, many years ago. And, it was, there were some of the people when we went to the NRA show up there in Kentucky, we went to eat dinner and somebody that I'd met at that rodeo or something. And we were chit-chatting. She's like, how do you know these people? This is my hometown, you know? And it's just, it's funny. It's just being in this world, you just meet so many different people. And of course, the older I get, I kind of, sometimes I go, have we met before? You know, just jog the old memory. But yeah, it's a good life.
So it sounds to me like there is a rodeo past in your existence. Care to share that with us?
Yeah, well, I grew up. So I was actually born out in Las Vegas, Nevada, and my dad used to trap wild Mustangs out in the Mojave Desert in California. So I lived out in the. Well, I lived in the Mojave Desert out on a ranch called Thunderbird Ranch, which is just below Edwards Air Force Base. Mm-hmm. And I think Thunderbird now, I think, is some kind of a resort. But back in the late 60s and early 70s, my dad and the crew, they raised Peruvian Paso horses out there. And so my background is ranching and cowboying, and I started riding bucking horses when I was just out of high school, you know, competing in rodeo. And I competed in rodeo riding bareback horses for many years. And then I got hurt in 90 and or somewhere around, maybe I got married in 90. And then in 93, I got hurt. And that's when my son was born. And so I decided to quit and take a full-time job and get insurance and, you know, just, you know, try to keep your eye on the brass ring. But I still rodeo. I do sound production and I announce rodeos. I don't announce as many as I used to because of my full-time job and all the other homework that goes with being a rodeo announcer. But the sound production end of it is very lucrative. So I have a big trailer with big speakers and I haul them around the country. and put up the sound.
That's amazing. So,
yeah, I'm leaving next weekend, as a matter of fact, for I've got three rodeos back to back. So I'll come home and work 2 days and load up and change clothes and go.
You just switch hats.
I do. Matter of fact, I was gonna have a cowboy hat on because people are like, man, you're a cowboy, you're the urban air gunner. Where's your cowboy hat? And I'm like, yeah, you know, just throwing a ball cap. I had right before this, before I got on here, my neighbor called and I had to go up the road about a half a mile and get his tractor running. You know, I mean, that's the stuff. I mean, I didn't want to tell him no. I told him, man, I'm fixing to do this podcast and this YouTube thing. And YouTube, what are you doing on YouTube? Let me just get your tractor running and I'll take care of it, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's never a dull moment out here in the country. And so just to kind of give you a history of the urban air gunner, originally back in, 2008, I bought a little hobby farm. It was 8 acres, and it was just outside the city limits. I mean, I could spit on the sign that says no discharging of firearms in the city limits. And so every time a coyote, man, there was 50 acres next to me that was vacant and it was just grown up and there was fox coming through my front yard and I, you know, the coyotes is what I'm after. I mean, I've been hunting coyotes since I was 12 years old and it's just something that I just love doing. It's a challenge. Right. So every time I'd shoot a coyote out there on that property, here comes the sheriff driving up the road down my driveway is quarter mile off the main road. And, you know, I'm like, oh, here we go again. And he'd go, hey, is everything all right? I said, yes, sir. I said, I'm, you know, outside the city limits. I'm within my right. He goes, oh yeah, I understand. But there's concerned neighbors, you know, they don't know you. And I said, I agree. Yeah, I'm being respectful. So I thought I've got to find a better way to dispatch coyotes, you know, and be stealthy about it. Jim Chapman was my hero in the air gun world. And so I started looking, you know, and started really studying Jim's stuff, you know, and I reached out to him and I asked him about some guns and I tried some stuff. I mean, I had a Benjamin Marauder, you know, I reached out, I had a friend that worked at Benjamin Air Rifles. And I reached out to him and they sent me one and I was very displeased with it, not to bash anybody. It just didn't do what I needed to do. It's a great accurate gun, but it didn't do what I needed to do. And another friend
of mine. Early Marauder is not a coyote removal tool.
No, not at all. Not at all. And so a friend of mine that was in the business, another friend, he says, I'm going to put you in touch with Air Force Air Guns. And I'm like, you mean that little gun that has the squirrel with the army helmet? And
he's always protecting his damn nuts.
Yeah, I thought that was like a Chinese plastic gun or something. I didn't really know about Air Force. I mean, I was going to take my Benjamin air rifle and put that thing up and go out there and shoot him. I mean, I was just ready to do it. And so fast forward, I sent a letter to Air Force and explained to them what I was doing. And my buddies were teasing me about being an urban cowboy at that point. And I said, dude, I'm hunting coyotes with an air rifle, so piss on me off, you know? and they said, oh, heck, he's an urban air gunner now. And I thought, that's got a little ring to it. And so I just started, you know, going by the urban air gunner. And Air Force sent me this 25 cal. And the first coyote I killed with it, man, I was like, there'll never be another bad day ever. And so I would get on my golf cart and I'd go ride through the neighborhood and I would look for coyotes. And I mean, I would get out there with just a small hand call and I'd see dogs, you know, they'd come up and bark at me or something. I'd just stay right where I'm at. And then lo and behold, out of a little dirt alley, here comes a coyote, man. I'm like, you know, just drop him. And I thought, this is great. And so I became the urban air gunner. And that's, you know, kind of how that happened. So, you know, the rest is history, as they say.
Yeah, if I remember right, you were using an Air Force Escape.
That was my second Air Force gun. The first one I got was the Condor SS.
Condor,
yes. But the Escape, when they came out with the Escape, they sent me one, and I mean, that was a great gun. That, I mean, very versatile. I mean, mm-hmm. you could do whatever you wanted with it, and I love the 24-inch barrel on it. That thing. I killed several coyotes with it too. You know, I shot a lot of fox with it. There's people, you know, everybody has chicken houses nowadays. Everybody wants to be a backyard farmer. And had a guy call me. He says, man, he says, these fox are killing my chickens. And so I took a friend of mine with me. And this is early on before, you know, I was still using a flashlight, didn't have any night vision or anything like that. And I would kind of shine a light out there, and I'd see the eyes glow, and I'd tell him, it's, you know, it's right over there. And I said, when I count to three, I want you to turn that light on. And man, we'd count. And I mean, boom, I'd shoot that fox. And I mean, 75 and 80 yards. And this guy's like, are you kidding me? Did I just see that happen? I'm like, I'm telling you, man, these guns are awesome. And then next thing you know, people are wanting to buy a gun. And I thought, man, I'm going to go into business. That's tough. I mean, my hat's off to anybody that can sell air guns. I mean, I sold a bunch just, you know, sending them to Air Force air guns, or I'd buy a bunch of them and just sell them, you know. But it takes a special knack to be able to have an air gun company, and you got to sell more than just air guns.
Mm-hmm.
At one time, I wanted to open up a generator. I wanted to sell generators and air rifles. Yeah, not much of an entrepreneur, but I just thought, that'd be great. Everybody needs an air rifle and a generator. Yeah. maybe a six pack or something. I don't know. I always have these harebrained ideas, but yeah.
Well, you know, that's not a bad idea for a convenience store down where you
live. There you go.
Generators, air guns, and beer.
Well, you know, the hurricanes, we get hammered pretty hard where I'm at in Georgia. You know, Hurricane Michael, man, when it hit, it went all the way up to Macon, Georgia, which is, so just to put it in perspective, I'm in the southwest corner, so I'm an hour above Tallahassee. I'm probably just under 2 hours from Panama City, so to the northeast. And when that hurricane came up there, I was still in at my hobby farm, where it was still my house, and it took out the roof off my barn. It got my pickup truck. It got the roof on our house. And then it didn't stop there. It just kept right on going. You know, I mean, there was probably one of the most devastating things I'd been through, other than California earthquakes, as a kid, you know. And I lived in Ventura for a while. And man, San Andreas, when it started, you know, kind of rumbling a little bit, you know, you try to hold on to stuff. Boy, I mean, I have some fond memories of earthquakes as a kid. So yeah, I mean, yeah, but anyways, it's yeah, you know, air gunning is something that I do love it. You know, I love guns in general, you know. I wish I could give everybody a tour, but when you come to my house, there's my grandfather's shotgun is on the mantle. My dad and uncle's 22s are hanging over the window. There's right now, there's a shotgun in the corner. There's a 308 in the hallway. Just, you know, I'm living the dream here, you know, and got a gun safe full of guns that, you know, so it's just, I'm a gun guy. I love guns, you know, and, but air guns are, the great thing about air gunning is that you can go just about anywhere and shoot and be stealthy about it. And it doesn't matter whether you like to hunt with an air gun or just plink. There is something in this sport for everybody. Mm-hmm. And I was contacted by a big magazine that's over 40 years old here in Georgia. It's called Georgia Outdoor News. Mm-hmm. And they've got a new leadership. And they reached out to me. And the owner of the company, the magazine, he said that something in the growing up of children these days is missing, because these parents are going straight to a firearm. There's no... you know, there's no BB guns. They don't, you know, mm-hmm. we used to start out as a kid, you'd get a little Daisy You know, I had a Daisy BB gun when I was a kid, and I mean, look out, cats, sparrows, and dogs, and a few streetlights. You know, you go from that, then you go to a pump gun, and I've still got my original. I've got a Powerline 880, a Daisy. I got it when I was 10 years old, and I've still got it. And, you know, I mean, if that thing could talk, the adventures that I had with that gun. And kids are missing out on that these days. It's not, there's just not that, we live in such a fast food world. I mean, parents are just, everybody's working to survive, and you get your kid a gun and, you know, here, go shoot something, you know, go play. And I think the whole parent child experience with BB guns is it's missed in this day and age. And so, GON has reached out to me to help them kind of format this thing and bring, you know, make air guns cool, you know, to kids and get them off the couch and get them out there and shoot stuff in the backyard. And, you know, just, you know, I mean, my fondest memories are going down and shooting tin cans. Yep. You know, when I was, here's a funny story. When I was dating my now ex-wife, and I'll tell you about that later if you want to hear it. But anyway, so we were dating 35 years ago. I took her out to my mom and dad's ranch and grabbed some 22s and a brick of 22 ammo. It was $9. That's a cheap date. We went out back and we shot cans and shot cans and shot cans. And it was probably one of the best dates I'd ever been on, you know, just being able to go out and shoot guns, and she enjoyed it. She was a city girl, so she was being exposed to shooting. But
right.
Shooting sports is just absolutely, it's great entertainment, you know, if you let it be. It's an adventure. So, but yeah, anyhow, it's, you know, just shooting. I mean, it's just in general. I can remember in Ventura, I was, oh gosh, I was probably 7 years old, maybe 6 or 7. And my neighbor had a BB gun. I can remember walking by down the sidewalk, and there's lemon orchards on the, and, you know, we'd go out there and shoot birds or shoot a lemon or something, you know, I mean, we didn't get in trouble, you know, I mean, you just go out and play with the BB gun, you know, yeah. I mean, I only, and just to set the record straight, I only shot one street lamp. And I regretted that. I regretted that from the minute I squeezed the trigger, because that was, man, that was a butt whipping big time. So never did that again.
So I actually got, I in my checkered air gun past, I had a Crossman 760. And that gun was my pride and joy. It was my Red Ryder. From A Christmas Story. That was my gun. And I had a really crappy Tascow optic on it, which I thought was the greatest thing in the world, because I had a scope, right? And it was, you know, there were two of us in my neighborhood that had air guns, and the other guy had a Daisy power line like yours. And I had another friend who's like, "Hey, can I borrow your air gun for a couple of days? I just want to check it out." I'm like, "Yeah, here you go." So I gave him a tube of BBs and remember the Crossman used to come with the little plastic trays that would hook on your belt.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Full of pellets.
Yeah.
Well, I gave him that stuff, and he took it to his place, and it was like weeks were going by, and he wasn't bringing my stuff back. So I said, well, I this is before the internet or any of those cool things. Yeah. So during the summer break from school, I was wanting to shoot my air gun. So I went down to his house and I said, "Hey, is Butch home?" And his mom goes, yeah, let me get him. And I say, "Hey, Butch, you know, I lent you my gun like weeks ago. You said you wanted it for a couple of days. Can I get my gun back?" He's like, "Oh, yeah, hang on, I'll get it for you." So I'm sitting on his porch for like, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes. And he comes out and he hands me the gun. He says, "Hey, you want to go do something?" I'm like, "Sure." He goes, "Okay, well, give me another couple minutes. I got to get ready." okay, whatever. I'm not sure how much getting ready a 10 or 11 year old boy needs, but whatever. And, you know, in my house, my father was a Marine Corps veteran, and he had some very reasonable rules regarding using your air gun and what you were and were not allowed to shoot. And he said, no songbirds. I don't ever want to hear about you shooting any songbirds. My father really had a soft spot for canaries, and it went very deep into his childhood. He's like, do not shoot any songbirds. I'm like, okay, no problem. So I took that because I really, at 10 or 11 years old, I couldn't tell you what a songbird was from a raven or anything else. So I just didn't shoot any birds. So Butch hands me my air gun, which, you know, at this point, I'm naive enough to believe that everybody understands firearm safety, and you never hand somebody a loaded gun. But I was also naive to believe that I didn't need to check. And that this is where I learned that lesson very, very vividly. I'm sitting in front of Butch's house, and there's a bird up on the power line, and I put my scope up on him, and I'm like going through the motions, and I'm just imagining what it would be like to shoot that bird. And I pull that trigger, and the damn gun was pumped and it had a pellet in it. And that bird just went poof, fell off the line. I felt horrible. I had violated all kinds of firearm safety rules at that point. I pointed a gun at something that I didn't intend to kill. I should have checked it to make sure it was loaded when I got it. I realized all the mistakes I made, but I was so angry in that moment that I had taken this bird's life and didn't really intend to. Again, my fault, right? So my buddy Butch comes out, and I'm like, you jerk. And the two of us start scrapping on his porch. A few minutes later, we wiped off the dirt and kept going and had fun that day. But I was tore up that I had killed this bird that I really did not intend to kill. Absolutely, it was on me. It was not his fault. The violations were all mine. But man, that was my Crossman 760. And I'll tell you what, man, I think I wore that thing out. It probably could have done with new leather seals in the pump, but at some point it you know, you get married enough and divorced enough, and you part ways with some of your stuff, and you never see it again. But I never actually willfully got rid of that gun. It just kind of faded into obscurity.
Yeah, my cousin, he had that 760, and I always thought it was so cool because he's 4 years older than I am, and it's like he's the one that drug me into all the cool adventures. Like every summer, he'd come down from Arkansas. When we lived in growing up in Texas, and he'd come down with something new all the time. One year it's slingshots, another year it's shooting bow and arrows, and then, you know, the air guns. And, you know, it's just like, it was so cool to have somebody that loved that kind of stuff. And we were so close as cousins, you know, and we spent a whole week together in the summer. And, you know, cause he was kind of like the big brother that I didn't have, you know. So it really helped out to, you know, to learn that kind of stuff. And I remember what was the Crossman, the pistol? It was a 17. I keep on calling
it. There was the I know what one you're talking about.
Like the
you talk about the CO2 one?
The what?
The CO2 version?
No, the pump version of that. It was like I keep on wanting to call it a 1776, but it was a something 77 or, but you know, it just, you'd slide the breech back. It was a single shot, you'd cock it, you'd pump it up. And so we had a Wilson's department store, and I saved up forever. And I think that thing was probably $39, maybe, if that much. It seemed like it took a million years to save for it, but I used that thing. I was probably 12 or 13, and I used that thing to dispatch raccoons. So I had a trap line, and I would go down the creek, and I would catch these raccoons because my dad wouldn't turn me loose. He had a Ruger single six 22 pistol, which I still have. I mean, he gave it to me, but that was like the holy grail, you know, to be able to carry that. He was not going to let me take that down through the woods. And but I saved that. And I mean, I would dispatch those raccoons with that thing. And man, I'd get them out of the trap and I'd go skin them before school. And I'd sell the furs to make a few, you know, a few bucks. And that's back in the 80s when furs were still worth something. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, nowadays the fur market, the fur boom's long gone. It's over with. And I tried to buy a full length coyote fur coat the other day, $1,500 custom, and it wouldn't fit me. I was going to try to have one made. And it just, you know, they're like, well, we have some synthetic fur. And I'm like, that's like drinking Diet Coke. I don't want that. I want the real thing. Yeah. So anyway, I can't justify spending that kind of money for a fur coat. But where would I wear it? You know, I want a coyote coat, you know?
Well, I can't help you with coyote, but we actually just had a guest on the podcast. In fact, the one that we entered into the Outdoor Writers Association of America contest for best content of 2023, we entered her episode. She has been on a rampage going after coyotes over on the other side of the state here in California. Kayla Nevius has been unleashing holy hell on the coyote population there. But I wrestle with them here on my farm, and I'll tell you, I would love to get some hides here. And unfortunately, what I get a lot of is California ground squirrels. So, Rick, if you ever want a ground squirrel coat, I probably have enough in my freezer right now, enough hides to probably make at least a shawl for you.
Yeah, you know, maybe we ought to sit there and eat squirrel and sew them together or something, you know.
There you go. Well, if you want them, you got to help me process them, because that's where all the work is scraping them, getting them dried, and then tanning them. Yeah. So you got some work to do, but they're in my freezer.
I'll be. Yeah, I've actually been invited out there to do some ground squirrel hunting once before. And my schedule is so crazy. I mean, it's hard to just take up and go, and I'm on the short list. I'll be retiring. Hopefully, if I can find something to do at 65, between 65 and 67, if I can find something that'll pay dividends to fill that little gap before I draw Social Security, I'm going to do it. But otherwise, I got 10 years and I'm done. So then that'll open up where I can go, and I can go on these hunting adventures. And, you know, my buddies call and go, hey, let's go to Nebraska and go coyote hunting. I used to go to Nebraska all the time. I love it up there. And man, getting to sand hills and calling coyotes. And you might walk 100 yards and you go over a sand hill and sit down and you call, and here comes a coyote out from under a yucca plant. You know, I mean, it's so crazy how the coyote hunting changes out there, you know, from east to west. I mean, a coyote's a coyote, but you know, it's just that you have time to watch them coming from a mile or two miles away. And then when they disappear in a little gully somewhere, they pop up over here and you're like, holy mackerel, you know. And, you know, you just have all this time in the world, and your heart's beating, waiting for them to come, you know. And here in Georgia, you know, you might see one coming 100 yards, and, you know, you really don't have time because he's bearing down on you pretty quick, you know. So you have to throw up and shoot him or stop him or, you know, just – It's a challenge. It really is. And then you throw an air gun into the mix, and it's even, you know, I guess my farthest air gun kill on a coyote is 134 yards. And it was at night. It was probably one of the smartest coyotes I'd ever tried to hunt, because several people had tried to kill it. And after I did it and did it with an air rifle, I felt bad. You know, I was like, well, this thing escaped everybody's, you know, gun. And here I go and smoke it with an air rifle. But
It's probably Wiley Coyote's smarter older brother.
It could have been, you know, but it's funny because I talk to a lot of people and ask them when they tell me, oh, I got a coyote over on my place. And, you know, and I ask them, where did you hear it at? You know, or did you see it over here? Or you see it over there? And you start getting all this information. And then that's when that chess game starts. you start trying to figure out where, you know, you find out where he's moving at, what his path is. And you just kind of set up this little triangle and you get in there and, you know, hopefully he'll come out where you want him to. And, you know, you get it, you know. But
I think a lot of people have this vision that hunting is, you know, grabbing a gun and going and wandering around the woods. And that's not what it is. Yeah. You've got to understand not only the animal you're after, you have to understand their behavior, but you mm-hmm. have to really know and understand the one you're after.
Yeah.
Correct.
If you're not keyed into his schedule and his timing, you could wander around in the woods for weeks. Not see anything. You got to do the homework first. So you're right, Rick. Getting that intel on their patterns and their behavior is definitely up there on the list.
You
use a call when you go after coyotes?
I do. I've been involved. A shameless plug. I've been sponsored by Fox Pro for many years on their field staff, and they make the best callers that I've ever used. I mean, there's a lot of electronic calls out there, and I've tried a lot of different ones, but Fox Pro is Fox mm-hmm. Pro for a reason. I mean, they were the OG of the electronic calls, and you know, they do a really good job. But yes, I use a call, and then I use hand calls as well. I've done some filming with a gentleman who lived in Arizona for many years and moved to the back to the Midwest. His name is Mark Zepp. He's involved in coon hunting, predator hunting, and so he has a line of calls that he makes. And we did some filming several years ago, and were just wonderful times because my son was involved in it as well, and the whole family. So, but yeah, I use hand calls quite a bit, and the thing that I have to be careful of, we have a lot of owls out here, and you can get hit in the head by talons, and it does not feel good. So, I mean, you can be up against a tree. I've actually been sitting up against a tree calling and had a bobcat run across my legs.
Wow.
I will tell you, and I wanted to be real cool about it, but I screamed like a girl. I said, this bobcat just ran across me. You know, I'm sitting there calling, wah, wah, wah. You know, I've had coyotes run into me. You know, they just come barreling in and you just can't stop them. I mean, their mind is, they're so focused on that sound. And I mean, it's just like they come in and just boom. And they're just like, wait a minute, what did I, you know? And yeah, they turn around and run. I mean, coyotes are not people. People call me all the time and they'll go, man, I got a pack of 20 or 30 coyotes in my backyard. And I said, well, there's never been 20 or 30 coyotes in one pack anywhere in the world that I know of. I mean, most I've ever seen are 8. And I mean, and that's rare. Yes, they are pack hunters, but you know, you might have 3 or you might have a pair, and the way the sound bounces off the trees and echoes, it sounds like there's a bunch of them. Mm-hmm. It's just 2 coyotes, you know, jibber jabbering back and forth. And you know, so you can go out there and you can call them up, you know, they'll just come running at you. And they're, I mean, I've caught them before, and you grab them around the neck and they just go limp. I mean, they want to act all big and fierce. The only time that you're really going to have a problem with a coyote is during the denning season. And if you get near a den, and California is really bad about coyote attacks for the simple fact that everybody's moving up into the hills and trying to get that country atmosphere, and they're invading somebody else's home, you know. It's just like the white man did to the Indian. They're invading, you know, and it's just, you know, I mean, you get Fifi out there in the yard, and I've literally seen a coyote come out and attack a dog. I mean, a house pet.
Oh yeah.
You know, and I've seen Fox do it. Matter of fact, I had a guy comment one time, said, oh, well, Fox don't hurt dogs or cats. And I took a picture and sent him a picture of this Fox chewing my cat's kitten. I mean, they're just pulling it apart, you know. They're animals. They survive. They're hunters. They're, mm-hmm. you know,
Fox got to eat.
They do. And here's the funny thing. I rescued a dog here a while back. Now, he's outside because I didn't want him jumping all over me. But he's part Basset Hound and part Bulldog. So if you can imagine.
Oh, wow. That's confused, man. Little, that's confused.
Little guy. Let me tell you, he took off after my cat and I had to get on to him. But then it occurred to me that that Basset Hound and that Bulldog, he's a predator. That dog is a predator. It's bred into him to be a predator. So I went and got him a training collar, which just happens to be sitting right here. It's a little tiny shock collar. It doesn't hurt him. I use the sound. It's got a tone that beeps. And he's such a smart dog. When that thing beeps and I'll look at him, I'll go, leave it. And he'll turn around and come back. Well, now that him and the cat are becoming friends, or he thinks they're friends, he'll walk up to the cat and sniff, and man, she'll just whack him and he'll yelp like a baby. You know, but he still, it's just his mindset. His mindset is I'm a hunter. Mm-hmm. And that, so he puts his nose on the ground, and last night he took off down in my back pasture and he got after a deer, you know, and I heard him bawling, woo, woo. Like, Shorty, yeah, honey, he come back up like, you know, I'm just hunting, you know. So you have to kind of keep that in mind. I try to correlate that with coyotes. You have to remember that a coyote's a predator. Yeah. And when you're hunting the predator, you become the prey. So you have to put yourself in that mindset. And I tell people to bow hunt your coyotes. And what I mean by that is you got to watch the wind, you know, because the coyote's always going to try to travel downwind and make sure his nose matches what his ears are hearing. And so once he gets downwind, you can't beat his nose. You're done. You may never see him. And so, you know, you add air gunning to the mix, it gets really, really tough. So, it's like the angels are coming down or something. The sun's setting through my window and it's getting brighter in here. I can see my.
I was like, what's going on? Yeah.
I am the anointed. So, yeah.
It looked like the glow from Pulp Fiction. Remember
yeah.
when every time?
Oh, yeah.
So I've got this really cool door, and as the sun sets in the west, it just shines, lights my living room up, and it's. I wish everybody could experience what it's like to live out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, I literally am 40 minutes from anywhere.
Well, hey, I'm available next Tuesday. I'll see you. I'm kidding,
man. Jump on a plane and fly out here. I'm serious. Patrick knows. I mean, I know where he's at. So I used to announce rodeo down where he lives, close to it. And matter of fact, last year I was down at Flagler doing a big bull riding at the Flagler County Fairgrounds. But I'm going to be going iguana hunting with some guys down there in South Florida here not very long. Well, I'm going to wait till the fall when it cools down again. Mm-hmm. But what's that?
Good idea. It's going to get hot down here soon.
I know. And them jokers will be out at night with the alligators and the snakes and all that stuff I don't like. Mm-hmm. And, but yeah, I mean, look, mi casa, su casa. I take people hunting all the time, and it's amazing the people that reach out to me and ask questions about air guns. And I have invited people to my private gun range, and that sold a bunch of guns for Air Force, you know, I mean, They've sponsored me from day one and never looked back. And even during my hiatus, if you wanted to call it that, my dark days, you know, they were right there with me, and they're like, hey, whenever you're ready, we're here for you. You know, same with Fox Pro. And that says a lot about the integrity of the company, you know, and
Yeah, it does.
I had somebody tell me one time, always hitch your wagon to a winning team. And I found mine with Air Force. So there's another shameless plug.
I do like the people at Air Force. Yeah.
Yeah.
And when I was talking to Tun Jones, and he shared the
micro,
the 25 caliber Escape
with
the shorter barrel,
mm-hmm.
the power that thing gets, you know, and it makes you think about the shot, because you get a single shot and then you got to reload. And I was like, well, that might be on the bucket list to be playing with.
Yeah.
So.
Single shot guns always make us better marksmen.
Well, they do. And I, you know, over the years, people, you know, they're like, well, why doesn't Air Force make a repeater? Well, so before Rapid Air came along, John McCaslin set out to make the most powerful, most accurate air rifle he could. And therefore, that inline pressure that's coming down that barrel, yeah, you know, he's got the ability to make a repeater, but he didn't want to. He wanted to make that gun and make it the best he could. And they have, I mean, that is the flagship gun, that 25 SS, that Condor SS. And I call them the bird guns because everything's named after a condor or, you know, different things like that.
Yep.
You know, the Talon and that kind of stuff. But, you know, it is a very, very powerful gun. And, I mean, I'm shooting that 25 cal with a 50-grain hollow point projectile that's made by Mr. Hollow Point. And, I mean, I'm turning those coyote heads into jello, you know, at 75 yards. And, I mean, it's coyotes are very resilient. You gotta break the motor and anchor them, you know, or they're gonna get away. I've seen them carry 223 ammo for several hundred yards, you know. So it's something that, you know, one shot, one kill attitude, and it does. Mm-hmm. It does make you a better marksman, you know. Of course, now they got the Rapid Air Works, and their bench rest stuff is second to none now, you know, in which that's out of my wheelhouse, but I do have a micro hunter that's being ordered, and well, it should be here just any day. But yeah, that's what I'm carrying down to Florida to hunt iguana with.
That's what I have in 22.
Yeah,
and that thing with I have an immersive. No, I put the new Element Helix. No, not the Helix. The Element immersive prism scope.
Okay.
In other words, because the field of view, Rick, is 10 times.
Wow.
And when you're hunting for that iguana, you're like, there he is, and it's a fixed power.
Yeah.
So that we've talked about that a lot on the podcast. I have it on four guns.
Yeah.
And it just comes right up on it, and bam. If you want normal eye relief, you got to do a five power. And I'm shooting, because you got to shoot an iguana in the head or he runs away. He laughs at you.
Sure.
He runs away. So I'm dropping him with 177. I have, a Catran bottle version, the little guy, and then I got the micro hunter, and I've never had a raw. My God,
yeah, like, they're
if you miss, it's you. It's that simple.
Yeah,
and I've put everything through it. JTS pellets, JSBs,
yeah,
everything. I'm like,
yeah, I'm kind of a snob when it comes to the ammo. I've had a lot of people send a lot of stuff over the years, and I'm always reluctant to take it. Just for the simple fact that, you know, they'll tell you, here, try this out. But then they expect a review or they want something. And I just, you know, I try to politely say no, you know, not that it's not good stuff. It's just that, you know, the people that started out with me, and I apologize for that sun, guys.
You're fine.
It just looks like you're the chosen one. That's okay.
Well,
it adds to the mystique.
but you know, the people that believed in me when I was nothing, I'm still nothing, nobody, but the people that gave me the chance to do things, those are the people that I've built the relationship with. And I think that at the end of the day, when all this is gone, those are the people that I'm still going to have the relationship with and be able to hang out and go to their house and talk about the old times and stuff. So, you know, Dick Dixon, he's retired now from JSB, but Joe's a great guy, and he and I chit-chat. We were on the phone. He called me. Well, he texted me the other night. I was sound asleep, and I was like, man, do you never sleep? You know, so we got on the phone, chit-chatted about stuff, but they've always kept me with ammo. I mean, I'm just a JSB geek, man. 25.39 grain is my go-to pellet. And then Robert Vogel is just never said no. If I needed something and to test or whatever, and just these folks are genuine people that really care, and they want to help everybody. They can't always help everybody, but you know, I mean, out of the blue, I'll get a box full of ammo, and out of the blue, they'll get a case of wine. There's a wine vineyard behind me, And so I go over there and I'll send out, you know, wine to my buddies or something, just a little bit of Georgia, you know, taste of muscadine. But, you know, it's just, I do like sticking with those people that have put up with my garbage for, you know, all those years. I mean, that's the only way I had to repay them, you know, is just be, you know, true to them, you know?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, you know, and we got air gunning. You know, I helped lead the charge for big bore air rifle in Georgia. So that really opened up the floodgates for hunting. And it's brought a lot of gun guys into the air gun realm for hunting big game. And it's, man, there is nothing like it. I mean, could you imagine what it was like for Lewis and Clark having that air rifle, that Giardoni,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then, you know, these guys that are coming up now, the power is triple of what, I mean, that 800 PSI with a cast iron tank. I mean, we're shooting 3,000, 3,500, 4,000 in some cases. And Tom Gaylord hit it on the head one time. We were doing an episode of, I don't remember what we were doing, one of them shows. Anyways, but you know, somebody asked, where do you think we're going to stop? And Tom said, where are you going to stop? I mean, you're going to keep going until, you know, the sky's the limit with the air. I mean, they keep making things bigger and bigger and bigger. And, you know, now they got the Zeus out there, that great big
72 cal. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, 95 cal.
Yeah. 95. Yeah. I forgot about that one.
I mean, where do you stop? You know, I mean,
at some point, the only the wall that we run into in air gun development is a guy from the 1400s, Bernoulli. When he wrote his laws of fluid dynamics, he said there are limitations to the volume of air you can move through, you know, normal orifices. So the only way to get really more power out of air guns is to make the projectile much larger. Right. You can still hurl a really big projectile, but when you start to get into 72 and 95 cal, it becomes, you know, the level of absurdity to get that energy level. To me, departs with what really makes an air gun useful. And for me, on my farm, this is my use case, I really love I shoot pellets 95% of the time because they do slow down. They don't have that lethality out past 100 yards. Right. They're giving up their speed quickly. And I want to poke a hole in that rat's head at 15, 20, 30 yards. And then he goes away. You know, that's my job for the air gun here. And, you know, I really geek out on precision shooting and getting that accuracy and how small can I make that group.
Right.
So for me, the air gun ticks all those boxes. I've never chased the power. So for me, it, you know, Pat and I have had this conversation where we're just like, hey, you know what? You're going to chase this power right into having a seat in front of the House of Representatives, trying to understand what kind of restrictions they're going to put on us, because they're going to view us with the same eye that they use on firearms. And we're going to be lumped in with them the same way other countries have done already. So be careful how far we chase the power, because it might not work out that well for us.
Well, I've been scolded by other air gunners before talking about, you know, big game hunting and how powerful some of these guns are. And I mean, I draw the line at the 50. I mean, the 457 and the 50 cal Texas are my go-to guns. But the thing is, I've had these air gunners scold me for talking about it. I'm like, if you are naive enough to think that the government has not seen or even know about air guns, you're crazy. Mm-hmm. I mean,
It's not the government you need to worry about. It's the Karens.
It's well, the that Karens, too. But
Karens,
I mean,
in the world that are going to get their ear and nag them until they do their bidding.
Right. Well, and that's something that, I mean, I don't know where it'll stop. And frankly, I'm the kind of guy that shoots the guns right out of the box. you'll never hear me talking about modifications on my guns, because I've taken guns right off of the floor. I mean, just built and shot them. And they every one of them are so consistent. Now, the projectile, you know, there's not a magic number. There's not a magic bullet. I get emails all the time. Well, what do you think is the best bullet for my gun? Well, you know, you're shooting a 457. Just because mine likes a 340 doesn't mean yours is going to like 340. Mm-hmm. You know, you might have better accuracy with 255. You know, you have to put the homework in and shoot a lot of ammo, because what works for me may not work for you. I mean, all of our styles are different. And I try to explain that to people, that, you know, go out and shoot. The whole point of this is to enjoy it. Mm-hmm. You know, it costs money to play. Go out and get a bottle of air, get a box of lead, and just go have fun. You know, I'm not a precision shooter. I mean,
go fly some pellets.
If I get in a circle that big, I'm good.
Yeah.
You know, so I can't stop long enough to be precise on stuff or be a precision shooter. I'm just, you know, I'm constantly going. So, that's kind of my take on the air gun soapbox, as far as, you know, get off the couch, go shoot your gun and enjoy it, man. Don't try to copy somebody else. I mean, just, you know, if you want to ask a question like, well, what do you think might be a good hunting bullet? Well, you know, I can tell you, I use in my 457, that 340 grain hollow point is great. You know, it works. It, you know, if you want to hunt deer, you know, I mean, I go bigger with the 50 cal. Your shot placement is everything. It's going to be, you know, you have to understand that you don't have that hydrostatic shock like a powder burner has. There's some there. I got a slow-mo video of shooting a deer at, I don't know, 45 or 50 yards, man. And she was dead on her feet when the pellet hit her, or the projectile hit her, man. She jumped 6 foot in the air and you could see her body just kind of bend. And she's running, and I mean, she's just dead in the air. She hit the ground and it was just lights out, you know. And it's, you know, go spend the money, go buy some ballistics gel and buy you a turkey baster or a turkey pan and melt it back down and use it over and over and over. And, you know, that's people, I don't think a lot of people know that you can buy ballistics gel, you know. Mm-hmm. And it is expensive, but man, what fun to see what your projectiles are actually doing. And I wish that I'd have thought about it in advance. If I'd even had an inkling, I would have found that. I got a 50 grain 25 cal that I shot out of my Escape that is mushroomed so good that you're going to want to saute some onions with it. That's the kind of mushroom that had. I mean, it was excellent. And I used to take it to SHOT Show, and people, you know, I'd show guys all the time, well, these guns really powerful. And I'd pull it out and go, well, there you go. FBI ballistics gel, 40 yards, you know, and I mean, that thing's just all been out of shape. So, you know, it's just fun. I mean, make your shooting time an adventure, you know. You know, don't be a stick in the mud and just go and, you know, well, I'm going to shoot a target. And I mean, people get enjoyment out of that. That's great. I mean, but ballistics gel, or, you know, we used to take those suckers, them little lollipops that you get, all in different colors, had a 2x4 and line them up out there. And we'd all take turns, you know, trying to knock those, you know, and they make little sparkles. Or silly string from the dollar store, that's priceless. I mean, $1 a can.
Shaving cream too. Shaving cream.
And I'll tell you what's even better. I did a video with whipped cream. And the pressure, I think that's got nitrogen or something in it. It's the pressure that they use to put in those cans.
It's actually nitrous oxide.
Okay. Well, at the end of the day, that thing will roll out. That can will unfold and be flat when you shoot it. I mean, it is amazing. And I probably probably think people think I'm stupid when they watch that video, because I mean, I literally laugh uncontrollably when I shoot that because I'm having fun. I forget about the camera being there. I'm having fun just shooting my air gun.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's, you just got to think outside the box, man. That's good, cheap fun.
Yep.
You know, and I used to invite my neighbors over and kids would come up. Hey, Mr. Rick, can we shoot those air guns? And well, heck yeah. And of course, my son, he would, you know, when he was little, he'd come up and he's like, hey, Dad, can you get the air rifle out? So-and-so wants to see it. You bet I will, you know.
Yeah.
And I've been fortunate enough for different companies to send more than one or two guns to me over the years. And I've made a lot of kids happy. Let me just put it that way. I pay it forward. So, and I'm not scared to give stuff away. It doesn't, you know, it's just one of those things that there's a lot of people in this world that want and can't afford. And so, you know, I'm blessed. And so I try to help them out. So.
Well, yeah, Rick, I want to thank you on behalf of the air gun community for your time today and for sharing some absolutely incredible insights into the air gun world with us. It has been absolutely delightful. So thank you. Thank you very much.
Well, I'm sorry I got, you know, rambling a bunch. I mean, I'm a talker.
That's what we do here.
Yeah. That's what this is all about. Just three guys having a good conversation and bringing those in that don't know.
Yeah.
Yep. Into the circle.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing, man. Anybody, I mean, air gunning is, you know, they look at the price of an air gun and go, wow, I could go buy a 30-30 for that kind of money. It's not. Yes, it's expensive to get into sometimes, but it doesn't have to be. You know, there's a lot of used guns out there. There's a lot of people willing to help you get into the, you know. Look, I started out with a scuba tank and a screw-on a bottle adapter. Well, actually, let me back up. I started out with a hand pump. And then I graduated. One of my we homeschooled our kids. And so one of the homeschool parents go, oh, I used to dive years ago, and I got a scuba tank somewhere in the barn. Well, I didn't know you had to have those hydro tested. I'd be walked on down there to the scuba diving place. And I said, fill her up. He says, no. I said, why? He said, it was out of date. So I paid like $45 to have it hydro tested. And he put paintball sticker on it. And, you know, I mean, that's how I started out, you know. Mm-hmm. And then I saved up and I got a little tiny, one of them 90 cubic inch bottles that holds hardly nothing. And then I wound up getting a 4,500 carbon fiber, you know, and then lo and behold, I got a compressor, you know, and just started moving up and moving up. And it took a long time to get there. And, you know, and I don't ask for a lot of stuff. And you know, I have people call me sometimes, why don't you ever ask for anything? I mean, I don't deserve anything, you know. I mean, I love shooting and I try to buy what I can, because I don't want to be beholden to anybody, but Air Force is, I'm telling you, they are a real sponsor. Man, I got my own bed at their house. I love going there. I love going to Texas and hanging out, and, you know, we'll go to the factory and get to see some top secret stuff every now and then. And then, you know, when work's over, when 5 o'clock whistle blows, man, we're going to go somewhere and have sushi or, you know, eat dinner, and then we're going to go back to the house and we're going to sit around the pool and we're going to, you know, have a glass of bourbon and talk about, you know, life. You know, I mean, this is like, you know, these people are just, they're just genuine. I mean, a lot of, you know, Justin Jacobson, man, he's a great guy too. You tire guns. I mean, these are people that just will sit down and have a conversation. It's not, I'm better than you because I have XYZ or I did this or I did that. We're just humans, man. We just, you know, we get lucky every now and then. And, you know, I mean, nothing makes me tick any different than anybody else. I'm living life, man. I don't want to work 30, 40 years, get the gold watch and die. I want to enjoy my life now. And then when I take up the rocking chair, I can look back and share them stories with my grandkids. You know, I mean, that's just me, you know?
Yep.
So. Anyway,
no,
so
I hear
thank you guys for letting me come on.
No worries, Rick. We're honored to have you here. And with that, Rick, we're gonna thank you for your service, and we're gonna invite you to come on the Airgun Geeks again in the future, well, and give us an update on your new adventures as they start to unfold.
Yeah, I will. I'll you want me to make the check out to Patrick or you?
You can make it out to me. I don't trust that guy, Patrick.
I wouldn't either.
Well, the check is in the mail, guys. No, that's cool, man. Well, thank you so much. And, hey, look, I really enjoyed our time. I am so glad that you reached out to me when we were at SHOT Show, because I was so overwhelmed. And I wanted to touch on that real quick. And I know we're running low on time, but I really appreciate – there were so many people that came to me at SHOT Show and hugged my neck and shook my hand, and it was just overwhelming for being out of the limelight for so long that people were just like, you know, we're so glad you're back. And then, you know, you're taking time to sit down and chit chat. And so, you know, I mean, life is good. It really is. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm glad to be back, that, you know, just had to get through all the crap that happens. And so, yeah, there's some cool things coming pretty soon.
Well, we're happy to have you back.
Yeah. Well, thanks again.
Thank you, Rick.
You bet.
All right. Wow, Bill, that was a treat.
It was. Heck of a lot of fun. Rick is always a hoot. And, you know, Pat, you got to get on your editor and have him get that piece that he recorded at SHOT Show polished up and published, because I think that was great content too, featuring Rick, and we need to get caught up with our output here. And
most and definitely. Yeah. That'd be a little treat. That'd be launched out there. They'd be like, oh, what's this?
Yeah.
But I thought it was really good that we really got to find out, because I've watched Rick since 2015 was his first video, and it was him, and it was Ted's Holdover and Giles over at Airgun Gear Show. And I'm like, what's this Air Force stuff, you know? And it was a good entry into VAST stuff. And funny, when I was talking to him before you got on, he was getting comments still on his videos. Mm-hmm. So it's forever, and there's the it's just priceless. I mean, so with the upcoming with the upcoming competitions. So we got RMAT coming up. Mm-hmm. Even though you're not shooting, you get to meet us, you know, and everyone else and everything that we were talking about, it will be confirmed there, especially since they're having some, it's like the vendor night and stuff like that. So you can go to rmac.com and figure all that out on when to be there and all that. But it's the culture, and people from around the world will be there. Mm-hmm. And that's the cool part. I mean, every year is different. I will say that.
And from what I hear, there's still spots available at RMAC for their, correct, you know, they did not the sell out.
Of the site.
Mm-hmm. There's still spots available. There's still opportunities to shoot there. So do check that out and do get after it and get yourself a spot.
Most definitely. All right. Any final words, Bill?
That's it for me. Have fun. Go fly some pellets and be a light in the darkness. I think that's all I got this week.
Exactly. And like always, stay geeky.